And you're tuned to KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend. It's time for Brewocracy Now with Port Townsend City Manager John Morrow. You can join in that conversation by clicking on our link on our website, kptz.org, or you can very simply send me an email, dj@kptz.org, and I will ask for you. Good afternoon, John.
Good afternoon, Tim. It's great, as always, to see and hear you.
Well, it's great to be back. A big thank you to Charlie Burmant for filling in for me last week. I spent some time on the coast. You know how that is. Yes. You ought to give it a try sometime.
Hey, that's a good point, actually. I think I was literally talking to my wife just a few days ago about maybe we can spend a weekend on the coast and just take it in. So yes, let's hope for that soon.
Do that. Leave your laptop at home. I highly recommend it. You've been busy. There's a lot to talk about. I suppose I will just throw that ball to you. Tell me where you would like to start.
Well, I think there are two things that make me particularly excited today. One is our guest, Councilmember Owen Rowe, who's with us. And so this will be a fun-filled, undoubtedly insightful and thoughtful conversation, because that's a lot of what Owen brings to the table. The other is I wanted to announce, publicly, really for the first time, our police chief situation. And I think last week I told Charlie, who was pressing me, give me a week, and here we are. So. I think, as he said in the news, with more information available now, that we've selected Thomas Olson to lead our police department. And Thomas is a deputy chief of police at the University of Washington. He's accepted the conditional offer of employment. This is a complicated one because he needs to do a background check, a polygraph, a medical exam, a psychological exam, a whole host of things to make sure that he is who he says he is. And I'm confident at this point, given what I've seen from the almost fully completed background check, that that we can announce his name publicly, because it's just been a real joy to discuss and negotiate with him. I think his principles and track record and real sense of diplomacy and integrity and self-awareness is really something that we'll benefit from. And frankly, he's a great fit for Port Townsend. During the interview process, he came here at least three times, spoke with business owners, community members, council members, police team. He did his homework. This is not a whim for him. He didn't have another set of cities he was applying to try to lead police chief. He really wanted to be here. And so I'm really excited about it and happy to talk a little bit more in detail about that. Maybe a little bit about his record if people want to know, and wherever you want to take it. But secondly, welcome to Councilmember Owen Rowe.
Hi.
Hi, Owen.
Glad to be here.
Good to see you.
Yeah, same to you, Tim and John.
I most of the time I've seen you around town, you're a busy person. This is not the only hat you wear. how has it been going with you being on the council?
Well, I've really been enjoying it. Of course, it was a little different than what we expected because of COVID. Now I'm doing three jobs working from home. It's really been great to have the opportunity to collaborate with the other councilors and with city staff, and to participate in big decisions like hiring the police chief is John's decision, but definitely supported by us on council, and I've really been liking it so far.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. And, that is a big decision. And I think before we leave that topic, John Morrow, I would like to know, what is it? You mentioned a few things about the successful candidate, but I know this is often a difficult decision and often a fine line between the pick that you make and the other potential candidates, what set your pick and whose name already escapes me above the rest?
Yeah, he'll be Chief Olson, and his name is Thomas Olson. You know, really, there's a number of things that really set him apart from actually a field of over 30 excellent candidates. So first off, I was really thrilled to get interest. I mean, clearly, a number of very qualified, you know, current chiefs or police, law enforcement professionals moving up through the ranks see Port Townsend as a desirable place to be. And, you know, kind of no surprise for those of us who live here and love it. But from a law enforcement perspective, it's particularly interesting given this time in history and the statements that, you know, Councilmember Rowe, our community and the rest of council made about our expectations, mainly through the Ad Hoc Committee on Public Safety. And you know, it was always my desire to hold a little bit on the recruitment of the chief, the next chief, to make sure that that's actually something that they'll discover in the record, so that those who might want to come in with a different set of values that might not fit with Port Townsend don't even put their hat in the ring. And those who actually see the opportunity for us to be a progressive policing 21st century based principles, you know, police team with excellent de-escalation skills, collaboration in mind, an understanding of behavioral health crises, and a real nuance that really reflects the community's values. Those are the kind of candidates we wanted. And I mean, I don't get to say this too often because I'm not often right, but I feel like I was right on that one. It really got the right people applying. So we were spoiled for choice, frankly. We had four excellent finalist candidates. And like I said, over 30 candidates that were all really top notch. Thomas, from the very start, really distanced himself in the field by demonstrating his thorough research into Port Townsend. He, like I said, met with everybody. He engaged in dialogue with the team, with Interim Chief Serber, and really understood the culture of our organization from what he can from being in the I-5 corridor, now understood what Port Townsend was about. I mean, he's long come here to visit, but you know, making specific trips like reconnaissance to understand as much as he possibly can about the role and about the community. That was far and above the most research. I don't think I've seen that in the level of research and commitment to one place in an interview process, particularly because it's all been remote. I mean, some candidates are applied without even having been here. So I think it's clear that he's a fantastic fit for the community. And he draws on 32 years of service in law enforcement, including at the UW, also at Washington State Patrol. You know, he's managed nearly every division. He's changed policing in the places he's been. He's got a great educational background, you know, not only from the FBI Academy just a few years ago, but, you know, leadership training, emergency response training, conflict management, diversity-centered leadership. You know, he's got a master's degree in organizational leadership, a BS, and a three associate degrees. So I mean, he's kind of like a multi-tool with a smiling face and a real willingness to listen. And I guess I want to tell the community, after that process of having, you know, dozens and dozens of people weigh in with their thoughts, what caught my attention was that so many people called out among the four great candidates that Thomas really resonated with them. And so I took that very seriously from the community, that they picked up on how he might fit with us. And that was a big weight in the decision.
Well, as Councilmember Rowe said, this is you as the executive. This was your decision. But this question is for you, Mr. Rowe. Do you think that having that kind of deep dive into policing that the council took had an effect on this selection process?
Absolutely. I think almost all, if not all, council members participated in a number of the public events and parts of the interview process. And I know I asked Mr. Olson, I asked them all about, you know, were they aware of our ongoing ad hoc committee on public safety, and what did they think about that, and you know, did that raise any concerns? And he said, you know, he had been following it closely. He had watched the video of all of our meetings, was reading our minutes and reports. That was before we had done that final report. But, you know, he was definitely, as John just said, completely engaged, very interested, and you know, supportive of the direction we were going. You know, we didn't get into any specifics, but you know, really impressed as somebody who was looking at Port Townsend because of that. And so,
well, welcome to Port Townsend, Chief Olson. I'll get used to that, and it'll take me a while, but. This is a community that has an engaged populace, and so I'm glad to hear that he spent that much time with the background and just being from the University of Washington. I'm sure he's been to Port Townsend before, not new to this community. It is a unique community, and welcome the right person in that chair.
And I don't think it's probably appropriate for me to share his personal details to much of a degree, but he also brings a family. To our town. And I'm really excited about that, because in my, you know, almost daily for a while conversations with him over the negotiation period, he's the kind of person that I want to get to know as a human. And I think he has the same approach to the community. He wants to walk down the street and you know, talk with folks and engage. And I mean, that's kind of what we, I think, both need and want, is somebody who's very, you know, sure, he comes from a large department where he's very much, you know, he's a deputy chief at a very large institution. But he wants to roll up his sleeves and actually have that interpersonal connection with the community. And I think that's just, that's a joy. And actually resonates with me, because I mean, that's my tendency. If we weren't still in video form, you know, I'd be at a coffee right now, hopefully with dozens of community members, just kind of talking about what's on people's mind.
Well, like you brought a family to Port Townsend too. And the more families we have here, the happier I am, because I'm just an old retired guy and there's too many of us here, frankly. But so
there's room for everybody. Yeah, we want to make room for
everybody. There's room for everybody. Other things have happened. The annual report came out, and another year has passed. It's been a difficult one. We still have no monorail here in Port Townsend, and probably won't for quite a while, although I'm refused to give up on the idea. But we made it through a difficult year, and is your impression that financially we have prevailed?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's an underlying story of prevailing. I'd be curious, can I just say a few words about Councilmember Rowe? And we didn't rehearse this, and he's looking slightly nervous. But I mean, he not only wears a number of hats, but he's the kind of same type of individual as our incoming police chief, where he's done his homework. And so I remember meeting Owen when I was a candidate for this role, and he was running for council. And I often can't keep it straight. I mean, not only does he serve on the Rules Committee, the Transportation Committee at Council, I believe he's still in the Jefferson County Developmental Disabilities Advisory Board, the Fort Ward Advisory Committee, FWAC, the Creative District Board, and probably a number that I'm forgetting. So what's so cool about our council is, you know, yes, they attend council meetings, but boy, they do a lot more than just council meetings and pretty much barely get compensated for it. So, you know, Owen is just, with all those books behind him, if you could see this Zoom call, you know, that's a really good statement about who he is. He likes to dig in, do a bunch of work and research, and he connects a lot of dots between different topics. Before I get into the annual report, I feel like I want this call, interview to help the community understand a little bit about Owen, and not to put you on the spot, Owen, but what did I get wrong about that? And what else is there that I feel like this is a good time for you to air?
Well, thank you. Yeah, you did put me on the spot a little bit.
Sorry.
But I will just say that, you know, I'm interested in sort of how people come together in community. And, you know, that's obviously that connects to the government, but also, you know, I'm also the board president for the food co-op, elected by the member owners. That's separate from the government. And I also have a day job working for Centrum as the box office manager. So, you know, all of these roles are about, you know, building community in, you know, physical or cultural dimensions. And I just remembered one of the other council roles that John skipped in his list, which is I'm the liaison to the Library Advisory Board. So, and I was on that board before I was on council, but now I'm the council liaison.
Well, hence the three jobs to make it here in Port Townsend. I do, if I remember correctly, you were quite involved with KPTZ at the beginning of this radio station. So you are somebody that has been involved with this community to a deep extent for quite a long time.
Thank you. Yeah.
And we really appreciate that because having people like you is crucial, and it's, I can't imagine how many hours are spent each week by each council member. When I looked through, I think it was maybe 2 weeks ago when the committee assignments were handed out, the amount of those committee assignments that went to every member on that council is really quite overwhelming in my mind.
I'd say a light week is about 10 hours, and it can easily get to 20 hours, you know, when you have the business meeting with 100 pages to read to prepare for it. And, you know, that's an investment, and that's my weekend before the Monday evening meeting.
Did notice that one of those committee assignments was the PDA. That has kind of risen to the top lately, and I think it's probably just good luck that you are on here with John Morrow, two people that are into the PDA issues. So if you don't mind, John, you may have something to say about this. If not, I'll just ask a few questions about it.
Yeah, well, maybe I'll just frame up kind of maybe where we're at right now, and obviously welcome the questions as well as any thoughts from Councilmember Rowe. But look, we, you know, it's not like we've been sitting our hands on this one. I think, you know, we there's multiple angles here. There's an oversight responsibility that the city has by our code, really, and how we set up the PDA. And so we started that public conversation about any changes needed in that that approach just this week. So that came to a city council meeting. Instead of having it be the first reading with decision making, you know, council generally agreed to just you know, take it as more of a discussion session and to work over the coming, you know, weeks and months to get that right alongside Parks and the PDA board, because that's really essential that we do this together. You know, I will say, and I think it was maybe slightly misrepresented in the media, you know, we've had many discussions, you know, at the sort of co-chair of the board and mayor and city manager level, also with the partners. You know, I have a weekly conversation with the interim executive director, David Timmons, and Parks. We've been doing that for, you know, quite a while now. So, you know, it seemed to appear in the media that there's a lack of conversation happening, and that's actually not exactly the case. But from here, there's a lot of different, you know, there's kind of what's happening from the city perspective, which is really that oversight relationship. And then there's a whole lot of other things happening, you know, that the PDA board is wrestling with right now. So again, I encourage folks to go to those board meetings that are broadcast, and you can see the meeting minutes after, you can watch the recordings after. That's one place to get information, to weigh in, to, you know, express your opinions. And then the same thing at city council. Now that there's something out saying, here's some changes to the code that we're proposing, no decision yet. Here's an opportunity for you to weigh in on what you think is the right balance there. So, you know, it's an ongoing set of challenges, some of which the city is connected to directly and some that we're not. But clearly Fort Worden needs to be successful for this community to be what it really can be.
Yeah, I don't think that there is an option here. I think you said it very well. Fort Worden needs to be successful. We have, of course, a vested interest, KPTZ, in that we're moving out there, and it would be nice to be part of a vibrant community again at Fort Worden. Councilmember Rowe said that he was the box office manager at Centrum. I bet that's a lonely job right now.
I'm doing it from home, and you know, just the emails and the phones are forwarded to me. But all of the events are virtual too. So, that I'm not sitting behind a window waiting to sell tickets. People would never be walking up to that window right now.
What an exciting, I mean, not to just do a bit of a pump up for Centrum, but I mean, with things mostly virtual, I had a really fantastic conversation with Rob Berman this week. If I don't think I'd be betraying Rob's trust when I say one of the things he said to me was, wow, you haven't even seen a Port Townsend with Centrum's events running, you know, and to some degree, that's true. I mean, I was technically here sometimes when there were events, but not living here. And what they've done for the suite of events and programs they have for this year, mostly virtual, but actually, I think there's a couple things that might be in person pending some decisions. It is such a rich set of opportunities. And for those new to the community, man, this is not the year to see what's fully possible, but they're still going. Much like the city services, we didn't stop water, sewer, transportation planning because of COVID. We're just doing it differently. And I love the evolution that Centrum's been going through to adapt to COVID and some of those things that actually might carry over.
Well, there's no doubt the things that happen out at Fort Worden, it's just a local treasure. And this has been a tough year without it. And we're all waiting anxiously for it to return. And either John or Owen, either one of you, I suppose this is a bit of a geeky question, but John, you have no problem with the policy geek angle.
And nor does Owen. Let me be.
I'm good with that too.
Okay, so here, this is a toss up for any of you. The article in the PDN mentioned that the PDA was created by the city, which is the chartering municipality. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
I can dive in, but Owen was around when this happened. It happened a couple times.
Yeah.
It's an interesting history, but do you want to take a stab or do you want me to go for it?
I think you should start and maybe I can follow up.
Yeah. So, I mean, I wasn't here, but, it's funny to see something that was created by city ordinance and, the city has the authority by state law and RCWs to actually create public development agencies to tackle certain tasks. And it allows a certain advantage of agility a range of other benefits actually of forming PDAs. They're very common across the state. I think even in Seattle, for instance, I think there's a dozen or so. I mean, there's a number of them in just one municipality. So it's a structure that the city set up. And Owen, you're going to correct me if I'm wrong. I know that one iteration was drafted in 2008. That's the more common look that we have now. But there were PDA. There was a PDA form before for a different purpose, and it was sort of repurposed. So that's the date that kind of sticks in my head is, you know, when the city came together with state parks and worked out this agency to be nested as a city blessed and created public development authority.
Yeah, and I think the context there is that when the state park was formed in 1972 and then kind of opened for business, and that's the same time that Centrum started and the idea of lifelong learning and education and arts programs at the fort got started. And by 2008, state parks was really struggling to figure out how to manage that directly. And then that's where the idea of creating the Public Development Authority to manage those resources for the continued benefit of the community and to help all of those arts and education organizations continue to thrive.
Yeah. Yes, lifelong learning, part of the reason for being. And in a weird way, I mean, in 72, I wasn't even a thing yet. So the history here literally predates me.
I had been on the map for quite a while in 1972. But yes, so financial monitoring, I think the recent history of the PDA does suggest that there is an increased need for financial monitoring. How might the city be involved with that?
Yeah, I mean, I encourage listeners who want to dive a little bit deeper into this to maybe do the rewind on the council meeting this week, because I tried to not drone on about it, but sort of frame this up a little bit. And then council had some great questions, including those from Council Member Rowe. In the establishment of the PDA, you know, there's this kind of balance here where the city doesn't control the PDA. You know, the city has a responsibility for oversight. So hence, all the details in the code that we can geek out on, and I don't want to get too deep in the muck right now, but, those are set in stone as a way to make sure that, you know, to some degree, the financial viability and the operations of the PDA was stable and ongoing. And I think given some of the challenges faced due to COVID and also some of the existential challenges that really predate COVID around, a couple things come to mind around an agreement with state parks for revenue sharing that would kick in, I think, this coming year, as well as a deferred maintenance backlog. I mean, you know, we're looking at, you know, 3-digit million deferred maintenance issues. And for good reason, the state was trying to basically schlep that on us, you know? And so I don't, ever since the get-go, I've never envied, you know, the responsibility of the PDA to pick that up and find a way forward, because it's a Herculean lift. As they blossomed the campus and actually, you know, created a lot of value there, did a bunch of retrofits, new projects, Maker Square, et cetera. In the background were some of these really challenging issues of stability. And COVID kind of just, you know, was the probably more than the straw that broke the camel's back there, but really made this very clear and imminent. So, you know, this, because of some of those challenges, and then there's alleged mismanagement of funds and some things that, frankly, it's still an open question. Would a higher degree of oversight have caught those things or not? And I'll be very honest. I mean, it's not clear. It's not clear, and we don't want to impose requirements that actually have no value, just for the sake of greater control, because that's not our role. Our role is oversight and not control. So that's a conversation happening right now. And every member of the public could actually weigh in and say, hey, I've looked at line, you know, XYZ, and I actually think let's take this up, let's take this down. And that kind of feedback goes to council to make ultimately that decision.
And this is certainly a topic that can take up a lot more time than we have. And I hate to gloss over questions that the public may have, but we have time. We have time later on to get circle around as things become clearer with the city's role and the amendments that will be made in the future. I do want to get to a couple of questions from the public.
Great.
Is this good for you? Okay.
Absolutely.
That's
why we're here.
Okay. And this is for either of you, whoever wants to chime in. This one from Kellen. After reading the city's annual report, I was struck by the size of the police budget. How is it that the police budget alone is greater than the combined budget for street maintenance, city council, public works, engineering, and facilities?
That's a great question. I could take a stab at that unless Councilmember Rowe wants to dive in, because I'm
going right ahead.
He's read every line. I know he has, and he decided on the budget. So along with his six colleagues, that's a conversation that's national, obviously, around how much resource people expect to be in law enforcement. And I feel like the ad hoc committees helped us get through an understanding of the details here, because what doesn't come out in the line item are things like the jail contract or the prosecutor contract and some of the things that we actually pay the county to do for us, so that we don't have to have separate departments and even a greater budget to take care of as a city while the county does the same thing. So buried in that roughly, you know, if you wanted to tally it up, it's like 11% or so of the budget, and about 30 something, maybe 32% of the general fund budget, buried in that are those contracts. And we can't not do some of those things. We're required by state law and sometimes federal law to do some of those things. So That accounts for a lot of it. And then honestly, having people on staff. I mean, we pay people to protect and serve. And we pay some of those folks. I mean, every single one of them, at least the couple of ride-alongs I've done with the police team, they're protecting and serving, and they're dealing with behavioral health issues. They're working their personal relationships with people who are in crisis. You know, I've seen it play out in front of my face, and I've been impressed. That requires training. You know, that requires the skills and the tools to be able to perform those instead of just going into arrest mode or escalation mode. You know, I've seen officers work with great agility and tact at getting to far better outcomes. And frankly, more financially sustainable outcomes than the cycle of incarceration or the cycle of you know of escalating to the getting people into jail and dealing with lives that have forever changed. So, it's a deeper story, and I'd encourage the listener to possibly go back to the ad hoc committee file, because that was a conversation. There was a presentation on the police budget, and we went through all the specifics and try to spell out the rationale there. Now, can that change? Absolutely. That could get higher, that can get lower. We're now running with about 12 sworn officers, even though the budget has about 15. We actually probably need more officers so that we're not putting too much of a strain on our existing team, because they're having to take forced overtime. We're having to work with the county to cover shifts, that kind of thing. So we want to get that balance right. And the budget's a great time to do that for this upcoming year. But Councilmember Rowe, I don't want to steal all the thunder here. You might have some perspective.
Well, I think I would add that, as you alluded to, the police budget does include the community service officer, the navigator, and dealing with a lot of things other than just the sort of, criminal image that we have of what the police do. So, the other thing I would add into that is that talking about the budget going forward, we will soon have a new police chief in place. And the ad hoc committee, we came up with an extensive list of recommendations and decisions from the past that have been successful that we want to build on. And that is going to set the direction. And we clearly wanted to support things like the navigator and the community service officer and the school resource officer so that they can serve people without reinforcing the sort of aggressive image of justice and policing that has been out there, unfortunately.
Well, so Councilmember Rowe, these recommendations by the ad hoc committee, do you see them increasing or decreasing potentially the police budget?
That's a difficult one. There are a lot of things in there that we wish we could spend more money on, like the community services and the navigator. And right now, those are under the police chief as an organizational structure. So that means that those items appear in the police budget. Mm-hmm. So, if there's other organizations that we need, that would be something that, council would discuss and John would, come up with a proposed solution. But to increase those services to the community would look like increasing the police budget.
Yeah. Just a great answer to be put on the spot like that. I mean, I would agree, and good work, Tim, for just cutting right to it. I think ultimately there's a larger question here, because if we wanted, would we want more community service officers? Would we want more school resource officers, navigators, maybe even more police team, better training? Absolutely. I mean, I'd argue for all of those things as being helpful if we suddenly could magic them up. But, in a limited constrained budget, it's really about priorities and trying to scale the maximum benefit with the resources we have. And of course, in that particular budget for most of the police budget, I mean, it's also, what do we do in the planning side of things or in the finance side of things or other elements of the overall city budget? It's sort of a set of trade-offs. So You know, for instance, the Navigator originally got going with a grant, and I congratulate the county sheriff's office because they applied for a grant for a Navigator and they received one too, because they saw how well it works here in our community. So there could be creative approaches. This morning, I had a great conversation with Chief Brett Black at East Jefferson Fire and Rescue. You know, a thing I've left out of this whole conversation is the JEFCOM 911 dispatch. That's in the police budget. We can't not have a 911 dispatch. That's actually required for safety for our community and for response. And Chief Black and I were thinking, we're discovering all these areas where we can work really closely together to get creative, to work together, and hopefully squeeze a bit of additional value out of our limited resource.
Well, it was a great question from Kellen, and thank you for that question, Kellen. I found that the questions I get from the public, usually from one person, but they're on very many people's minds. So I really do appreciate when somebody sends in a question. And we're getting short on time. I do have another question, and it actually came last week on a separate, completely separate issue. And this one came from Jay to John. Do you have any information on what the city is doing regarding Olicap's affordable housing project at 7th and Hendricks?
Ah, yes, I do. That's a good question, because that's been something that has been out there as an awesome opportunity. And it was a bit of a setback, I believe, last year when there was a grant that was sort of expected and it didn't come through. So I can say there's a permitting process for that. And just for those listening, you know, the proposal is a 44 unit mixed use low income housing project. And I've seen the plans for it my first month when I got here. I'm sure things have, you know, changed a little bit since then, but it's pretty impressive. It's located in a good location. They're thinking about great things like childcare amenities. And 44 units isn't going to solve our, sort of mixed use or low income housing crisis, but it's definitely a step forward, you know. And the building permit is likely to come to our planning department this week. So that starts the process of what the city needs to do to keep pressing go on the project, as I think Olicap rightfully finds ways to fund the project. As Mayor Sandoval has said many times, and rightfully so, you know, affordable housing needs subsidy. It just doesn't magic up and pencil out. It needs a subsidy. So, it's a great project, and we're rooting for it. And of course, the city plays a permitting role, and we will. We're very eager to get our hands on that application so we can move it forward.
Well, a great answer to a complicated question. We're at the end of Brew Now, and you know, it's been very nice having these the rotating city council members here to give that back and forth that sometimes is necessary from our elected leaders and our appointed leaders, and a very nice mix of answers from two very knowledgeable people. We'll be back next week. I want to thank Council Member Rowe.
Thanks, Tim.
Port Townsend City Manager John Morrow, always forthcoming. And thank you to everybody that sent in questions. Remember, you can always do that in the future. We'll be back next week. Thank you.
Thanks, Tim. Thanks, everybody.
Bye now.
Thank you.